Hi, I'm Pam Brown.
I'm Ann Diver Stamness, and this is Chronologically Gifted, Conversations on Life After 50.
Today, Annie and I are talking about what we learned from our guests who explored the topic of cross-generational relationships. If you missed any of the shows, you can listen to them at chronologicallygifted.org, iTunes, or Podbean. Annie, what stood out for you?
What really impressed me in all of our interviews is how much the cross-generational relationships meant to the people involved in them. They were literally life-changing for everyone. It strikes me how impoverished our lives are when we aren't fully open to nurturing friendships across generations. If John Pinus hadn't met Mrs. Benton, he would have stayed in urban planning and not gone into the field of gerontology, teaching and becoming a scholar and advocate for the elderly. Victor Lodato's friendship with Austin was all-consuming, like the friendships of childhood in which, as he described it, no question was off-limits. We heard their perceptions of how much these two women, decades older than they, meant to them, and I'm quite sure also that the women felt the same way. We find such cross-generational relationships to be extraordinary, and perhaps this shadow of ageism is present in that perception. Victor wrote, "Others regarded our devotion as either strange or quaint, like one of those unlikely animal friendships, a monkey and a pigeon, perhaps. And that perception was present with both Austin's friends and Victor's. People in both generations didn't quite understand the attraction, the connection. Underlying that lack of understanding is a notion that people of different generations have nothing to give one another and no reason to be interested in each other. However, the truth, as each of our guests demonstrated, is that the richness of friendship and love knows no age boundaries."
I was moved by the descriptions given from our guests who talked about a specific relationship, like you mentioned, Annie, that they had with someone from a different generation. And equally, but differently moved by Gina Pell's use of the concept perennial. I want to begin with the more personal. Victor and John shared their relationships with someone older when they were in their 20s, reminded me of my friendship with Catherine Tabor, who I met when I was 22 and she was 53. I feel very much like Victor and John that it is about the chemistry between people, regardless of age, that draws us to each other. Catherine and I became best of friends for decades. We met at San Diego Unified School District, where we worked and found we both loved to play tennis, so we started out playing tennis together. We took a few trips together. These are some of the happiest memories I have during my 20s. Catherine had more energy at 53 and later at 80 than I ever had. She was absolutely brilliant, very stubborn. Our guests, talking about the love they felt for each other, reflected how I felt about Catherine. A friend of mine took a beautiful black and white photo of Catherine and I, which hangs in my house, and one can see the depth of affection in that photo. So I want to say that intergenerational relationships are about chemistry and love, much like other friendships, like you said, Annie. And it's also about being able to find each other, at work, in public spaces, neighborhoods. Somewhere there has to be an avenue to connect.
I agree, and our interviews made me think of the connections that I've had in my life. And I've been blessed in my life to have two Austins of my own. The first was Ed Williams, who is my professor during my undergraduate years, who encouraged me as a writer, delighted me with his humor, and introduced me to Dylan Thomas. Ed and I stayed in touch throughout his life. The second was Murray Thomas, who was a guest on our show during its very first weeks. Murray was my professor when I was in my doctoral program, and later was the chair of my dissertation committee. We connected immediately, seeing the world in similar ways, sharing the same sense of humor and of the absurd, delighting in each other's presence. We wrote books together and shared the same intellectual curiosity. Over the many decades we were in one another's lives, he was a central and beloved presence in my world. When emailing became difficult for him last June, we talked by phone daily. I traveled south each month to be with him. Over the summer and fall, as his health was failing, we talked often about how much we loved each other, and I always said, "How lucky are we?" People who've heard the story of this singular love we shared are often bemused by it, by the constancy, duration, and depth of this friendship between the two of us, separated by 35 years, and the daily communication that lasted over so many years. Murray passed away in early November. His impact on my professional life was profound and far-reaching. and I was always grateful to have him as my teacher and champion. However, it was his impact on my personal life that left me so bereft. Murray and I considered each other family, adopted father and daughter, and he was an anchor in my life, one I cherished and treasured. I loved him with all my heart and miss his daily presence in my life. I grieve the loss of my faux paw, as I called him, much to his delight. The world is a much better place because he was in it. My world is a much sadder place without him.
Thanks, Annie, for sharing that. You know, you didn't say this, but I know that you guys for years emailed every day.
We communicated for many decades every single day of our lives, yes.
So rare, and it says a lot about your relationship. So the other theme in our shows on intergenerational relationships shined a light on Gina Pell's conceptualization of this, something she called perennials, an effort to melt the divisions by generation, or as Gina put it, unleash a new freeform vision that is a mind set free of the boundaries of generations. I think Gina referred to this as finding your people. How much more natural this is than the rigid divisions we're used to. While the common descriptors based on a shared history of when we were born does offer an understanding of a generation, we need to be cognizant of stereotyping or generalizing in a way that divides us from other generations. It seems to me this will require more spaces where we actually come into contact with each other. So I think we all face a challenge to create these spaces, to reach out. When John talked about how he and Dorothy met, the space was where they lived. That space had older and younger residents. But even with this context, he described how Dorothy was different among older folks who lived there because she reached out. She showed interest, was inquisitive, hosted gatherings that were stimulating. Catherine was like this too. I feel these must be important qualities all of our lives. For more than a decade now, I've had a deeply meaningful and playful friendship with Matt. We met when he was in his 20s and me in my 50s. When he left Arcata, he lived in Southern California, Michigan, and now in San Luis Obispo. And all this time, we've maintained our love for each other. He comes up regularly to hang out, cook meals together, mountain bike. Thanks to our guests, I realized how my life has been touched by perennial relationships like this, and how much they have and do mean in contributing to a rich life. Once again, that's all the time we have for today's show. Annie is our editor and engineer.
Tune in next Thursday to Chronologically Gifted, Conversations on Life After 50. For more information, past shows, and the links to our podcasts, Facebook group, and email address, go to chronologicallygifted.org.
I'm Pam.
And I'm Annie. Thanks so much for listening.
We'll be here next week, and we hope you'll tune in, too.